Welcome to another episode of Review Improve, a podcast dedicated to personal and practical growth in the 21st century. I'm your host, Sam Rust, along with my co-host, Mr. Bradley Luce. Brad, Happy New Year. How was the holiday season for you and yours?
Happy New Year to you too. It was good. It's been weird because we both took a break kind of from this podcast. And so it's been weird coming back into it. Like, all right, we're on a roll. Let's get back on a roll here, move forward. And as our book today showed us, we both realized we need to set our goals and figure out what the key results are for those, for the podcast.
Yeah. I've been a big New Year's guy for most of my life, and really enjoy the goal setting season, and really enjoyed this book. You also joined the ranks of homeowners here recently. How's that going for you? Any horror stories yet?
Yeah, it's been great up until the sink clogged and I spent 5 hours one night working on it and still have not gotten it. So from what I can see, it's a mass of cat food and animal hair down the drain that the previous owners just washed everything down. So it's really gross.
There's nothing quite like a home improvement project or a home repair project that you sink a ton of time into and make no appreciable progress. That's one of the things in life that makes me step back and shake my head and eventually pay somebody to come fix my problems.
That's the point I'm at. I'm like, you know what? All right, let's get someone in here who knows what they're doing. They'll probably walk in and be like, oh, it's easy. It's just this. And 5 minutes later, they walk out and say, all right, here's a bill for your payments for next 3 months.
Well, hopefully you can get a plumber in there to resolve your issues and Stephanie can get back to a clean sink and a sink that actually drains. That's that helped pull in the dishwashing process.
I would appreciate not having to empty the bucket every couple hours.
Oh man. Well, a new year, we're in 2019. And the first book that we're going to review this year, Brad already alluded to it, is Measure What Matters by John Doerr. John started out at Intel in the late 70s, early 80s. And really grew quite a bit under the tutelage of a gentleman named Andy Grove, who was one of the main catalysts behind Intel and their stratospheric growth early in their company's history. Kind of took their mode of operating, which is OKRs or objectives and key results, and became, I think he calls himself the missionary of OKRs to the business community, and specifically in Silicon Valley. And OKRs have really swept the tech space and have migrated out of there into several other large industries, including the brewing industry, government, healthcare. Almost every major industry in our world today has been impacted by OKRs. Brad and I had stumbled across this book maybe 2 months ago. Several people had recommended this book to me, and we put it on our list. It kind of kept falling down the list a little bit. But man, when we got into it, really enjoyed the content of the book. It was challenging to me. It's definitely written for businesses, but there's so much personal application in there with reading it right at the end of the year and time for goal setting season. It was definitely impactful for me. What was your overall impression, Brad, as we get started here?
I actually was, one day I was pretty bored at work. I was doing a task where I could multitask, not multifocus. If I could multitask, my hands would be doing one thing. I could focus my brain on something else. And so I just plugged in the audiobook and honestly, I was just blown away. After the first chapter, I was like, yes, I need to tell everyone about this. I need to do this in my life. I need to do this with my chores. Oh, I need to do everything. So I really loved it because it takes my mindset and your mindset of setting goals, systematically working through where we want to get to. And it breaks it down to a very achievable, very clear, not confusing way that even someone else could come in, pick up our OKR objectives and key results list and be like, oh, I totally get where you're going and what you're doing to get there. And I can help you or I could do this as well. So I loved it.
Yeah, one of the opening quotes in the intro was, ideas are easy, execution is everything. And I thought that really summarized this book in a large degree. It's not so much about how to come up with ideas. It's about how are we going to take these big ideas or these little ideas, whatever size idea you want, and how are we going to execute on it? And how are we going to measure that we actually achieved the result that we were going for, and thus objectives and key results. I think it'd be helpful if we define that at the top. And an objective is what is to be achieved and what is the key word in that definition. A key result benchmarks and monitors how we get to that objective. The important distinction is that between an objective and a key result is a key result must be both measurable, and because it's measurable, then it's got to be definable. What were your thoughts on kind of starting out there?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. Objective is kind of his fancy word for goal or end result that he wants to get to. And then the key results are the measurable data set that it's a yes or no. Did we make it or did we not make it? When you look at it, it's clear, defined by either numbers or unquestionable proof that you either made it or you did not make it. And so if you hit all your key results and you have, and yet, since they're measurable, you can have a clear yes or no. If you say, yes, I hit all my key results, then you know you've hit your objective or your end goal. That's kind of what I got. He had several different, he uses a lot of examples in the book, talking through everything. Right, the book is structured so he presents an idea or a concept, and then he gives a real life world example. And so it wasn't something where you had to like remember all these definitions that he went through it. It was very easy to like, oh, that's what he means by objects. Oh, that's what he means by key results. Okay, it's very clear. And then he builds that foundation and he moves on from there.
Yeah. Something that was kind of taken for granted in the book, and I know that I take this for granted, is this idea that goals are a necessity. I'm curious for your perspective on this, Brad. I think before we go any further into the book itself, just talking about goals a little bit, I know I was back visiting old friends back in Idaho and talking about goals that we accomplished in 2019 and our goals or lack thereof for 2019. And it was interesting, the wide range of responses that I got in those conversations. You know, some people live and die by goals, and I think you and I are a little bit similar in that we've kind of always been a little bit more goal-oriented, for better or for worse. But what would you say if somebody said, I don't think that goals are really necessary? I'm not really a goal person. I'm not a big New Year's person. You know, what's your response to somebody like that?
I've actually had several people tell me that as I've been talking about this book at work. My goals for the new year, because a lot of people are like, hey, what you doing New Year's Eve? And I was like, you know what? You're going to laugh at me, but I'm working on my 2019 goals. And I've had a lot of people tell me that. And my question to them is, all right, goals aside, where do you want to go this next year? It's like, oh, I want to save this much money. I want to pay off this much debt. I want to do this or that. I'm like, okay. So what did you want to do last year? They're like, oh, pretty much the same thing. I was like, okay, so are you any closer to doing those right now this year than you were last year? They're like, oh, not really. I just got to keep on working at it. Like, okay, well, if you have a goal, then you have a clear path. You'll know what you have to do, what you have to say yes to, what you have to say no to, so you can hit that. It's just more clearly defined. Then you start telling people those goals and help keep you accountable, because people will be like, hey, you told me about this goal. How's it going? So, and it clarifies in your mind, other people's minds, where you want to go, and gives you something to aim for.
I think there's a tendency for us to float through life, and we're so focused on the next thing, whether it's how early I have to wake up tomorrow morning, what I have to do at work, or what I'm going to have for dinner the next day, that we lose sight of some of the bigger things that are going on in life. And because we lose sight of them, or we don't put enough emphasis on them, we end up not really making any appreciable progress. I think most people want at the end of 2019 to look back and see appreciable progress in several different areas. But if you don't distill it down to a goal, and then, as we're going to talk about here, get some key results underneath that goal, man, it's going to be hard to make progress towards that goal, and then it's going to be hard to realize if you are or are not making progress if you don't have a way to measure what's going on. So I think that goals are extremely important. I know New Year's is kind of a trite time of year for that. My wife and I have broken down our goals into quarterly goals. We did that all last year. I found that to be extremely helpful. And John talks about this in Measure What Matters, that you need long-term goals, but you also need really actionable short-term, you know, 1, 2, even 3 month goals to help keep you on track for the long term. The book is kind of organized around what he calls 4 superpowers of OKRs. You know, focus and commit to priorities, align and connect for teamwork, tracking for accountability, and then stretching for amazing. Those are kind of the 4 superpowers. And I really enjoyed the flow of the book. I enjoyed the numerous case studies in the book. People as diverse as Bill Gates, Bono, and Larry Page all had case studies that they wrote as part of the book, and how OKRs helped them in specific areas, whether it was with their foundations or their businesses. What of those 4 superpowers, Brad, I'm curious, which one stood out to you the most?
So the 2 that stood out to me the most was superpower 1, which is focus and commit to priorities. And the second one was superpower 3, which is track for accountability. Those 2, I think, are missing. Personally, I think are missing the most from today's society on New Year's resolutions, business goals, quarterly projections, everything that people do to try and move forward. Because people have these meetings and they'll figure out all what they need to do to reach this goal. It's black and white inside the meetings, or supposedly black and white inside me. But once they leave that meeting room, it gets all gray, and then it's hard to decide what to do to focus, to actually get to that goal. And so the 2 superpowers I like the most, especially for my life, is focus and commit to priorities. So you can, it helps you know what you need to focus on. And then it gives you ability to track. And so then you can keep yourself accountable to yourself and to others. So other people can come up and say, hey, can I see your data on your, for your key results, so I can know whether you're actually going to hit your OKR. So managers can actually see whether they're, the guys underneath them are doing the right, focusing on the right thing to meet the objective. For example, so say for yourself, you want to, you say your objective would be to save $100 more each week. So the key results could be threefold. 1, you'll cut out eating out from restaurants 3 days a week to 1 day. That's measurable and gives you a clear definition on what you need to do. 2, you'll start out going a little more out of your way to get gas at some cheaper gas station rather than Chevron on the corner that's 75 cents more per gallon, whatever. And then 3, you're going to budget your shopping each week to exact dollar amount and take that amount in cash so you don't spend more. So if those are your key results, they're measurable, they keep you accountable, and other people can see that, oh, that's what he's doing to meet his objective. And you can measure it easily with numbers, you can measure it easily with time, all that. So those are the 2 superpowers I like the most, if that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think this is, again, a new wave of managing / directing organizations or personal time, like you outlined there. You know, sometimes I think it's helpful to look back at history a little bit and where we've come from. You know, Henry Ford and several others kind of, brought in the industrial age, but really brought an authoritarian style of management, where humans were kind of reduced to numbers and what types of work they could output. And the assembly line was the most efficient way, and having one guy good at one task was the best way to make things happen. That transitioned slowly through Maslow's hierarchy of needs and some other theoreticians that came out, efficiencies and some other things, and became more of a management by objective. And John even talks about that in his book. HP, in a lot of ways, innovated the management by objective, which is, kind of the precursor to what we're talking about here with OKRs. But the substantial difference is that we have key results that are intentionally measurable. I think most organizations today have these big objectives that they're going after, but a lot of times they're cascaded from the top down, and it's really hard to get cohesion. And you know, one of the 4 superpowers of OKRs is to align and connect for teamwork. It's really hard to get teamwork around some ethereal, big, as Jim Collins would say, a big, hairy, audacious goal.
I love that. I've been using that term so much.
It makes people sit up.
So weird.
What's going on? A bag? What? But the beautiful thing about OKRs is they're designed to be public, and they're designed to be very trackable. Yeah, man, all four of the superpowers, they're really good, each in their own way. One that stood out for me was the final one, the stretch for amazing. Google talked about being innovators of scale. They didn't specify what necessarily they were innovating. Obviously, they're a technology company. It's going to be in the technology space. But they didn't limit themselves by saying in the browser world or in the search engine world. They just said, we want to, whatever we innovate, it's got to be huge. And as a result, they dominate so many areas in the technological space, from the best browsers to the best video sharing software. I mean, on and on and on. But they weren't afraid to push past what they thought they could achieve. And I think that that's really important. And that's one of the reasons why I really liked 10X by Grant Cardone, and why I think these books pair really well together. 10X is a little bit more for the individual, less for the organization. But in Measure What Matters, John Doerr really codifies a lot of what is talked about in 10X and provides a roadmap for organizations and for the individual to plan it out, and then encourages people, make a big stretch goal. You know, Google has what they call their aspirational goals, where if they make it 60 to 70% of the time, that's a huge win. You know, normally organizations are afraid to set goals that they think they might fall short of. And as a result, they cap their own potential. So I like the idea of not capping potential. And I like the idea of using big goals to make that happen.
Yeah, I actually, as I was reading this, I was like, Superpower 4 is just for amazing. I'm like, ah, this is going to be Sam's. I mean, his soapbox as he goes down. But in like going again, like Google is an information or technology or information company. And a lot of these companies that he talks about, people are going to be like, well, they're all informational, they're all technological based. So you can't use it for a physical production company or like a manufacturing. But the thing is, you can't. On a software information company, it would be easier than like a physical product in some ways, but with careful planning, it can and should be used on everything. So say the informational company will integrate OKR software into the day-to-day programs, their quarterly reviews, stuff like that. But with physical products, such as steel plant, automotive manufacturing facility, it's still very achievable and usable. You just have to plan it differently. You have to, rather than using a cloud-based software structure, maybe use poster boards in people's offices, meeting rooms. So you actually have to physically walk, because that's what you do in a manufacturing plant. But you just have to be playing around differently. So it's usable on everything, your personal life, manufacturing plants, informational companies. I think he even mentioned Dropbox in there, if I remember correctly, which is a total just information company. There's no physical product with Dropbox. But yet, they're a huge multi-million dollar company.
Another company that they talked about was Zoom, I think is how you say it, Z-U-M-E. But it's a mobile pizza delivery company that is trying to take on Pizza Hut and Domino's, that pretty much own the takeout slash delivery world in pizza across North America. And they've done that by putting vans in ovens and basically finishing the pizzas in your driveway. But that's another example of an industry that you wouldn't even necessarily think could be disrupted. And yet through the aid of OKRs and an innovative idea, totally revolutionizing the space and growing by leaps and bounds. I was curious if you'd run across that company in your neck of the woods. I think they started in San Francisco.
Truth be told, I try to avoid San Francisco as much as possible. I'll visit. It's fun to visit every so often. And it's a beautiful city when you're up high looking down. But I don't like the tiny streets, just the way they run things. It's just not me.
Yeah. that's fair enough. Yeah. But, you know, we've been talking about how OKRs can be used to grow and change businesses through lots of different industries and different company types. I think one of the byproducts of OKRs really goes back to our very first episode, Turn the Ship Around. In that book, Captain Marquet was all about pushing responsibility down to, you know, the guy doing the work. And I think that OKRs is kind of the official managerial flip side of that same coin, where if you use OKRs correctly, it can help you bring forward a more flat organization where there's less hierarchy, everything is more transparent, and people are taking responsibility for their own goals, their own key objectives and key results. And as a result, your organization is more unified, and a more unified organization is going to be more dynamic.
Yeah. So basically, what he, as he talks through flattening and creating everybody more as a team structure, he talks about how key results can be objectives for other people and objectives can be key results for other people. So it kind of works out. So it's like a trickle down effect. So he uses the football team analogy, and I'm not efficient enough to be able to tell that the way he does. So you guys are going to have to go back and read that himself. But basically, if my manager has an objective with four key results, one of his key results can be my objective, and then I set my own key results for that objective. So a CEO will set his objective and key results, and then his key results become the objectives of the people below him, so on down the ladder. The key pivotal point, though, is that people have to be able to set their own key results. You can set someone's objective, but their key results have to be something you can work with them, like managers can work with the people underneath of them to help them set it, whatever. But they, it has to be something that they are comfortable striving for and that they believe in. Because if you set someone's objective and key results, it's going to be the same as a dictatorship, just telling people what to do. And you want to tell them just where to go and let them figure out how to get there. You don't want to tell them where to go and how to get there, what path.
It makes a ton of sense. And, you know, another reason why you make these as transparent as possible is in any organization of size, and by size I mean anything with more than one person in it, it's going to be hard to have objectives that are siloed into one single department. You know, HR might have a goal of getting 10 engineers hired at a software development company, but they're not going to be able to, you know, interview enough people if they don't have buy-in from the engineering department to make sure that the people they're interviewing are qualified, just as a basic example. And so if you don't have transparency into goals throughout your organization, you're going to end up overcommitting resources or not realizing that you haven't committed the appropriate resources to make goals happen. And it's going to be this herky-jerky, you know, push and pull, trying to get things accomplished, rather than having a little bit more cohesion and seeing what your team members in your organization are trying to accomplish, realizing what's going to be needed from you, and together putting it in your key results and helping make the bigger picture happen.
Yeah, it's something you really have to be intentional about as you start to set it up. But once you get buy-in from people all throughout the organization, and people really start clicking into the structure, you can't stop the growth. I mean, because people will be clear on where they're going, what other people are doing, how they can help each other achieve the different objectives, but same key results, stuff like that. And so then since it's viewable by everyone, people are going to say, oh, I see that you've been on the same key result for the past 3 weeks. Let me help you out because I have knowledge in this area. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, and that was, again, one of the biggest things that I enjoyed about the book was there was a lot of companies, whether it was in healthcare, education, NGO organizations, that were really startups. And they used these to help them scale and to help them solve massive problems. I'm excited that today's show is brought to you, our listeners, by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. I know, Brad, you consumed Measure What Matters in Audible, and you want to share with our listening audience your experience with Audible?
Yeah, so go on Audible, type in Measure What Matters, John Doerr, he spells his name D-O-E-R-R, and download it. If you use our login code or our URL, it is www.audibletrial.com/improve. You can get a 30-day free trial with one credit to download a free book. So you can download this one. I really enjoyed it because the way they have this recorded is that each person they interview and examples they use. So as they go through and they talk about how Bono used OKRs, they have Bono read his section of the book. They have Bill Gates read his section of the book. So every single person, so Larry Page from Google, he has tons of sections in here where he's going through, he's talking, just like, well, even if it's just a two sentence quote, they'll have that person read that quote. So then it's just a whole bunch of conversations about how OKRs can change your life, change your company. And so it's on Audible. Go find it. They have tons of others. They'll have recommendations. If you download this one, they'll be like, hey, if you like this, here's some more that you can get. Again, it is www.audibletrial.com/improve.
So moving on in Measure What Matters, OKRs, which we've talked about, objectives and key results. It's a key organizational tool for basically marshaling objectives and where are we going as an organization. But we haven't really dived into the other side of the equation, which is the people side, the management side, and how do OKRs impact managing people and direct reports and things like that. We've kind of nibbled around the edges there. But one of the areas that John Doerr spends quite a bit of time on in this book is CFRs. I don't know if you want to give us a quick rundown on what CFRs are, Brad, and how they interact with the management side of the world.
Yeah, so it replaces CFRs are continuous communication using conversations, feedback, and recognition. It replaces like the 6 month reviews, the 1 year review, the performance reviews, the disciplinary reviews and stuff like that. Just 6 month, year, month, the old style management of, hey, it's been a while. Let's talk about how you're doing. Let's talk about everything you did wrong, you did right, and we'll reward you based on how you did. So it removes that and brings it into more of a daily, a weekly, just routinely check-ins. If you're worried about what key results are being set or the routes people are using to take the get to the finish line, it's a very low-key and easy way to check in, monitor, and help where needed. So it's basically like, hey, how you doing? This is what I see you doing. Am I correct in what you are doing? Then they can clarify what the actions they're taking. You're like, hey, I really like this aspect, but I don't like this back aspect. What are your thoughts on changing this one small point? Or, hey, you're doing great and keep on going where you're going. There's nothing you need to change. So basically it's like the employee is driving the car, but you're just in charge of the vehicle maintenance. So you're just checking in the pit stop. Hey, tires are doing good. Gasoline is a little low. Let's fill you up. All right, keep on going. Go get back at it. Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's really about taking what used to be more of an autocratic process with the decisions, results, performance reviews handed down from on high, making it more of a collaborative effort. Andy Grove, again, referencing him, one of the main gurus at Intel that was responsible for their success, had noticed that there was a certain subset of the population that was highly self-motivated. They were always pushing themselves to do more, to become the best versions of themselves, and they were the dream employees. But he realized there had to be a way to pull that out of other people as well, and that's one of the reasons that OKRs came around. But in trying to bring OKRs to the fore, he realized that if you don't make it a collaborative process, you're going to have a really hard time. What's the old saying? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And so CFRs are all about making this more of a democratic process. They're more process focused. They're not as outcome focused as performance reviews used to be. And they're fact driven because they're rooted in OKRs. You can see against your key results, you know, here I fell short, here I exceeded expectations. Now, obviously, there's nuance in that, and John Doerr talks about nuance when you're looking at your key KRs. But it's a lot more objective way of looking at performance, of seeking feedback both from your superiors and from those that report to you, and overall makes the process much more collaborative.
Yeah, it helps everyone take a step back more often and view together collaboratively to make sure the ladder is up against the right building, that all the rungs are secure, that everyone can proceed as normal and safely, stuff like that. It really works well with the OKRs. And I actually see this here with where I work. We're doing something similar. They've been rolling out different things along the same lines. They haven't called it this, but it's very similar. I've seen it with a couple of different other companies around Silicon Valley are starting to do this. It fits with more of the information age that we're at, where it's not this, hey, you didn't build 60 sewing needles or you didn't create 60 sewing needles today, so we're going to dock your pay a little until you increase. You can't do that anymore. It's more, I don't know. It's not as black and white anymore on people's performance. So this helps make it color in those lines. So it's very viewable and achievable to everyone in the process.
So if we're taking a step back here, Brad, and we're looking at OKRs in their totality and underneath that CFRs, and you had 60 seconds or less to pitch your boss or Elon, let's just say it's Elon, and you get past the autograph seeking stage, what's your elevator pitch for OKRs? What was your elevator pitch to Stephanie as you guys kind of revamped your goals around this entire process?
Well, with Stephanie, I told her about it and she was totally on board. So it wasn't really difficult there, which I'm sure you did the same with your wife. And I guess if I had to pitch it to, say, Elon, I'd probably say something along the lines of like, hey, I know of a great system for ensuring the whole team is aligned with their goals and hit their goals, and everything is aligned with your wants and needs. Being Elon, basically you set a goal that we'll call objective, and then figure out 3 to 5 specific measurable metrics or key results that have to be met in order for you to obtain your objectives. Next, the people below you take your key results that you've decided on and make those their objectives. They then set their own key results to ensure those objectives are met, and which are your key results. So then everyone from them up to you hit their objective. This process is repeated all the way down through the chain of command, and this will ensure that everyone is working on what's most important and everyone's priorities are aligned with your priorities, and there's no double work happening and everything is on the correct timeline. Used along with a good visual system to track and make everything visible, this whole place will spring forward and increase output.
Yeah, a lot of it just revolves around, do we want to know where we're going and do we want to pick where we're going? It's a very... in some ways, an esoteric conversation. And are we willing then to commit to a process that is a little bit labor intensive, especially on the front end? Reading through the case studies, they don't try to hide the fact that it's a lot of work, especially for higher ups, and it's different than what a lot of people are used to. But in my mind, it just makes so much sense. If you look at how, in my example, how I personally work and how I can achieve things, whenever I've achieved something, almost always there's been a big objective and then there was key result. Now, I may not have called them that, but I think we're all more effective when we're operating in that sort of an environment. It's intuitive to who we are as humans. And so I think that this system is a great way of kind of officially codifying it to a degree, and yet giving you a framework that's very flexible for your unique situations and helping you and your organization achieve success, however you define that. So I think that's an important way to start the conversation. And then obviously, specifics about objectives and key results and everything else will kind of flow from that conversation. But I think you have to step back and look at the entire forest and then start zooming in on which tree is first.
Yeah, I guess it really depends on who you're pitching it to as well. It sounds like you would more like dangle the carrot and then lead them to the water so they make them thirsty enough. I can't remember what book it was. No, it was the last one, the Seeking to Understand Before Being Understood. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, our last episode. Go back and listen to it if you have not listened to it. But that book, we talked about, hey, you need to understand where people are at before you try and change something. So I guess that would be a huge aspect as well. Before you pitch it, understand whether they're a data-driven manager or whether they are a very authoritative manager, or you just got to figure out how they work so then you could pitch it to who they are and how they work.
We're not going to get too far into the weeds on exactly the business cycle specifics of how this process unfolds, but there's several chapters that deal with the entire process from conceiving of OKRs and deploying them in an organization all the way to the end. But one of the steps that I think is really important and often overlooked in this or in any leadership endeavor was what John Doerr calls the wrap-up phase, where you look back at the whole goal-setting process after your designated time period, so after your quarterly review of your OKRs, and take a step back and just think about, you know, how did we succeed in our planning and our execution? Where did we fall short? One of the quotes that really struck me in the book was, we don't learn from experience. We learn from experience by dwelling on it. And just taking, you know, an official part of this whole process, stepping back, reviewing it in your own mind, taking time to think through what could have been improved, what went really well, and then implementing that in your next OKR cycle. So I think that that's something that's, again, super important as you're moving through and trying to implement this in an organization.
Yeah, hindsight is always 20/20. So you always will learn way more looking back than trying to read into situations ahead of you.
But we're going to stretch for amazing, and we're not going to wait for the hindsight to come upon us so that we can look back and see what we should have done. Right? Right, Brad?
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, I taking the 10X, and we were both talking before we started this episode about like our goals for next year and how we're going to implement OKRs into those and stretch goals, regular goals, stuff like that. And I don't know, just this really helped me clarify my 10X, because just reading that 10X goal book was great, but it was a lot of mind attributes and kind of the mindset you need to have, and didn't really have much footwork along with it. But this really helped solidify that 10X goal mindset into shoe leather.
Overall, would you recommend this book, Brad? Where does it fall in the pantheon of books that we've reviewed?
Actually, I was telling Stephanie, I'm like, this book is probably my second favorite book I've ever read.
Really? Man, high praise.
Yes. So I've already recommended it to everyone I know and everyone I talk to. So just because it's so clear on how to set goals so you can achieve them and how to achieve those goals you set. It's like you said, it's going to be a lot of work. But so yeah, I recommend it. I highly, highly recommend everyone read it, or at least listen to it again. Grab it off Audible. It'll captivate you and really get your mind turning on where you could be 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 1 month, 1 week from now.
Yeah, I also really, really enjoyed it. I implemented a lot of it into our personal 2019 goals, our quarterly goals. You know, I'm excited. I think our next episode, Brad and I are going to share with you, the listeners, some of our goals for 2019 and how we broke that out. We were talking a little bit before we started this podcast, and we're coming at it from slightly different directions. Brad's starting big, dialing down to the small. I'm starting small and dialing out to the big in certain ways. But really excited to implement what I learned in this book into that goal setting process. And it convinced me all the more that goals are very important. I think everybody should have goals. You should know what you're working for. You should know where you're going and how you're going to get there. So if you have any questions about that, I would read this book and 10X, the 10X rule by Grant Cardone, those two combined. If that doesn't light your fire, not sure what will.
Yeah, he said, given the chance, the OKRs and CFRs will construct the pillars of any vibrant, value-driven culture. Top-down alignment, or team-first networking, bottom-up autonomy and engagement. So honestly, why aren't you reading it?
Why aren't you reading it? Well, there was a lot of big jargon thrown out there, but it's true. It's true. You know, these principles, they're not something necessarily new. I think how they're packaged is new, but these are timeless principles that have been adapted for the 21st century, for the technology age, and we should be taking advantage of them. So, and finally, our application. Brad, what's your application for Measure What Matters?
Every goal I ever set from here on out will be in the style of OKRs, simply put. my 10-year goal key results will be my 5-year objectives, and my 5-year objectives will be my 1-year key results. How about you?
Oh, man, that's awesome. You know, mine, I want to make sure that I have measurable key results for all of my personal goals. You know, some things are a little bit harder, you know, like I want a better relationship with my family. You know, that's kind of a nebulous objective, but if you tie that to substantial key results, you know, whether that's in that example, number of phone calls, not that the number of phone calls itself is going to guarantee a better relationship, but it's definitely steps that you can take in that vein. You know, like this year, sneak preview, I have a goal of buying another apartment complex. That's in my yearly goal. In my Q1 goals, I want to attend 4 real estate meetups. I want to make 6 investor contacts, and I want to underwrite 18 properties. So those are really the 3 main areas that I know I need to be continuously working in to make that 1-year goal of buying another apartment complex. So, you know, having measurable key results in my personal goals was my application coming out of Measure What Matters. So that concludes our review of Measure What Matters. Again, hope you guys enjoyed that. If you did, please leave us a rating or review on Spotify, iTunes, podcast.com, wherever else you are accessing this podcast. We love hearing from our listeners, and have had a lot of fun engaging with some of you here and over the holidays. We're, as we mentioned, going to be moving into a goal episode. Brad and I are going to share some of our goals for 2019 and beyond. And then the next book that we're going to review is a classic, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Man, it's hard to meet somebody who enjoys investing who doesn't point to that book as kind of a seminal moment in their personal history. It's the same way for me. I've really enjoyed this book. I've read it several times, and I am looking forward to dialoguing this with you, Brad, hopefully exposing some of our listeners to this book as well. So, with that, thanks again for listening. This is your host, Sam Rust, signing off.
Yeah, and real fast before I sign off, I want to thank those listening in Germany, Indonesia, United Kingdom, Sweden, Switzerland. So all of you out there, we are in here in the United States, and we are overjoyed that you guys are tuning in and reading along with us. So catch you all next time.